not just your physical self, your emotional,
your mental, and your spiritual self. We believe there's four components that make up the being.
And now, once again, reintroduce Eric Hemingway. Eric, you can make your way up to this pulpit here. Get close to the mic, but not too close. Just right. As I've mentioned, Eric, he comes from the Petoskey area. He's the director of archives for the Little Traverse Bay Band of Ogallala Indians. And he will share the message about sacredness around us. Thank you, Eric Hemingway.
Thank you. So this is how things work. A friend asks a friend and a friend. So this is how I'm here. It's through friendship. I really only go to churches for funerals and weddings, so this is a very different experience for me to come here without having somebody either pass on or get married. So I'm trying to, you know, feel my feelings about this and adjust. So, but I want to talk a little bit about. I was asked to talk a little bit about sacredness, and I'm not going to so much wear my hat as the director of archives and records. That's my day job. I work as basically historian for the Little Traverse Bay Band of Odawa Indians, located in Emmett County, in Harbor Springs, Petoskey, Charlevoix area. And I've been at my job for 14 years, so I study my tribe's history. I am native. I am Anishinaabe Odawa, and if those of you not familiar with the term Anishinaabe, it means one of the translations is the original people or the good people. And the Odawa, Ojibwe, also known as Chippewa, and Potawatomi make up the Anishinaabe. But as I always say, you could have 10 different natives up here and they'll give you 10 different answers on self-identity, and they're all right. We've been labeled as Native American, American Indian, Odawa, Ottawa. It's all personal preference. So I'm just telling you how I identify, and that is Anishinaabe Odawa. And I am an Anishinaabe Odawa from a place called Onmatikamek, Onmatikamek and Donjiba. I am from the place of the prayer tree, and that is Cross Village, Michigan. It's just 20 miles south of Mackinac on the beautiful shores of Lake Michigan. That's where I grew up, and that's really where the foundation of who I am was formed and still is continued to this day. So when I was asked to talk about sacredness around us, I always go back home. That's the place that really defines sacredness for me is Northern Michigan, in particular, Cross Village. And talking a little bit about what sacredness is, it's different for a lot of people. So I want to just relay some personal stories about sacredness and coming from a vastly different belief system, a vastly different way of worship and faith, and how that belief system really pulled me out of some really difficult times. And that really is what defines sacredness to me, is having those experiences help me. And whether it's relationships with people, relationships with the land, or relationships, what we call, with creation. And my mom and other people were very important in this, and they would help me along in some difficult times. And there was one key word that really stood out, and that was Ninandwe Maganuk, all my relations. And that there's this feeling and belief that nothing is above you and nothing is below you. You are part of this bigger picture. That you're related to everything at one point or another. Rocks, trees, birds, fish, water, air, stars, moon, sun. Everything is related to you, and you're part of this larger family. And Ninandwe Maganuk, you know, our kin, our relations. So that was instilled in me as a very early age in Cross Village, that you're not part. You're part of something. You're part of everything. You're not above anything. You're not a control. You're not the master. You are in this together, and you take care of each other. Yes, we are stewards, but we're also brothers and sisters and uncles and aunts to not just our families, but our environment, that we exist together. So that was really ingrained, and it really took hold over time, but I had to be in the place to learn this. I had to spend time in this place called home to have that reinforced. And it was on multiple levels. It wasn't just, you know, growing up in this beautiful area with the lake and going swimming every day, but also knowing that the lake could take me at any minute. I numerous times almost drowned in Lake Michigan.
Like, it's very beautiful, but it also, I get to respect this. And so being in that home is a beautiful place, but also know the respect, the balance. And that was another component to this teaching growing up of sacredness, that there is a balance that has to be struck with you and your environment. And when you're out of balance with your environment, everything suffers. Whether it's, you know, the water's dirty, you're cutting down on the trees, or you're you're abusing your relationships with yourself and the people around you. There's got to be constant balance in your life at all times. And that's that. To me, that's that sacredness. that you're in balance with not just your physical self, your emotional, your mental, and your spiritual self. We believe there's four components that make up the being. And it's always a struggle to be in balance with all four. Not to be too physical, not to be too emotional, not to be too, it's hard to say too spiritual, but if that's all you focus on, you're not taking care of your body. Or if you're just taking care of your body, you're not focusing on your emotional aspects. So that's all part of the sacredness. And for myself, personally, it's about being home that creates that balance. If I'm home, I can be more in balance with my environment. And I really learned this early on, and I learned it more as I got older and into my, I can say this now, into my 20s, and also into my 30s, that the further I got away from home, I got further out of balance. And I had to be home to be in balance. So I spent a great deal of backpacking in my 20s, going to Southeast Asia, Mexico, Central America. Like, okay, the world's bigger than Northern Michigan, so I'm like, let's see this while I have, you know, time and energy and so on and so forth. So I was traveling all over the world, and this one day I was in a place called Laos. It's just north of Thailand, between Thailand and China. Beautiful area, and it just dawned on me one morning that this isn't home. This isn't where I should be. I have to go back. So I got my backpack and came back home, and within 2 years I settled permanently back home in Northern Michigan. And that place was, as I said, was formulating my idea of sacredness. And it wasn't just personally, but also within my tribe, my people, and realizing how long we've been here. We have vastly different beliefs, and I think that's a real testament to faith, is that you can invite other people from different beliefs into your house and have them talk and share and have that flexibility and being comfortable with that. Because there's a lot of other churches and other arenas where they wouldn't accept my story. It just wouldn't happen. They say, okay, what you believe in is pagan. What you believe in is that other belief. And sacredness, I don't believe, has any boundaries. It doesn't have a defined set of rules. Sacred is sacred, no matter where you are or who you are. To me, personally. So going into these different houses of worship is an honor, but also shows the flexibility and the substance of that house. So, coming back home and realizing that the sacredness has been going on for thousands of years in my home. The Anishinaabe have been here for thousands of years, we believe. And that sacredness is a direct relationship to our place. And I was having that built into me personally, growing up, by going to ceremonies, by going to certain areas, by having experiences, not just with my environment, but also my people. So, for example, you were talking about bread and sharing. One of my very close, I call her my auntie. She wasn't a blood relation, but she was my auntie. And she would take care of me in Crossroads. She would feed me. She would house me. She would never judge me. And I was a rough character at times when I was a teen. A lot of party, a lot of substance abuse. And she would never judge me. And I would go out, you know, raising heck with my sons and pass out on the floor, and she would just like wake me up and say, okay, you gonna eat breakfast? And kind of joke about it. And she would feed me instead of scold me and chastise me. And she would make food and nourish me and get me back going. And she would always do this over and over. And then when I finally knocked off all the monkey business and sobered up, it was the exact same behavior. Still nourished me, still fed me, never judged me. And so that was a real eye-opening experience to have that woman in my life saying, no matter who you are, we're going to take care of you, even good times and bad times. You're still part of the family. You're still part of the circle. You're still part of the environment. So she became part of my sacred circle. And her name was Mars, and she just passed on this year. It was a big hit. That was a rough one. But it was this place, this person, her family, and instilling that idea of that we're together. But could I have had this in other places? Yes, absolutely. But it made that much more that it was in Crossroads, my home. The home where my ancestors have been for 1,000 years. The home where my mom was, my grandmother, building this foundation of sacredness. And so now I try to carry that out in my home in Harbor Springs, which is very nearby. So we have people over, and a lot of these are younger people, like nephews and so on and so forth, and their friends. And I think about Mars and my mom and my grandma, and they're like, oh, we got to feed these guys. And when you have 4 teenage boys over, it's not a small chore. You gotta, okay, how many pizzas are we gonna order? What are we gonna cook? And they eat like 5 pounds of chocolate. It's like, okay, these guys are insatiable in their appetites, but we're providing that space for them. You know, I know that they're being taken care of, they're not partying, they're not abusing themselves, and it's, I automatically revert back to my home across the village, that place, that sacredness of taking care of each other. And without hesitation. I mean, growing up across the village, we were pretty poor. There wasn't a lot of money, so to speak, but we were really rich in community. To me, that shows sacredness. That even though you have very little money-wise, but community-wise, everybody was pitching in all the time, no matter what. And one of the key events for this is what we call a ghost supper. And a spirit of the dead is called a jibai. And the ghost supper is one of our oldest ceremonies that we have within our tribe. And it goes back to time immemorial since the very beginning. The first Anishinaabe passed on, they fed them when they went on to the other side. We've been doing this forever. And we still do this. And we did it across village at my home, and we would have maybe 200 people in one night come to our house, and we would feed them. And we would have a table set, and everybody comes in, and you sign a little book, and you sit and wait, and we read your name, and you come and eat, and then you clear the table, and the next group comes and sits. And this goes on for hours, it goes on all night. And this is one of my fondest memories as a kid growing up in Crossroads, just having these ghost suppers, because it's not just very social, but it's this connectedness, it's this sacredness, where people from all over, native and non-native, are coming to feed their ancestors. And growing up as a young kid, I remember going to these ghost suppers with my mom and my grandma, and I was like 5 or 6, some of my earliest memories. And we would go, and I'm like, where are we going? Like, oh, we're going to go eat, don't worry about it. I'm like, okay, I'm a young kid, that's all you need to know. And then we're like going around and total strangers' homes, and you go in and you're sitting down with all these strangers, and we go to the table, and my mom would say, you gotta eat a little bit of everything. I'm like, Mom, I don't like, you know, fried cabbage. I don't like pickled bologna and things like this. She goes, well, you have to have at least one bite because you're eating for their ancestors. And I'm like, what's an ancestor? You're 6 years old, you don't have this concept. And she's like, just eat and think good thoughts. So I did that. And I think, well, my ancestors are around me right now. My mom, my grandma, my aunt, you know, this is my inner circle. But I did what I was told, and we do this. And we go to another supper that night, and another. So all these Odawa families are doing this throughout the month of November. It just becomes ingrained. And we would host our own supper. And that's, we still do this to this day. All these people come in, they're eating, you're feeding them, you're nourishing their spirits. You're not just nourishing their spirits, but you're also nourishing the spirits of their ancestors. And we're not just thinking about them, we actually believe that we are feeding them on the other side. And we call that place Ishtami. And I don't know how to translate Ishtami. Some people say it's paradise or heaven, but those are your terms. And our terms are a little bit different. It's just the other, where they live, where the jibais go. And we believe that the Milky Way is the path that the spirits follow when they walk out from this life to the next life. So that's their road, the Jibai Mekong, and they go. But they're always connected to this place all the time, through us and through the area. So we're feeding them every year. Every fall, we stop everything, get ready for the ghost supper. No matter what you're doing, where you are, you come back home, you get ready for the ghost supper. So we do this every year, and it shifted from my mom's house to me and my partner's house, but my mom's still the boss. She still does all the cooking, most of the cooking, and says, you know, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And she's like, I'm stepping back, you guys are supposed to be doing more of this, but she never does. Like, Mom, you're supposed to be, you know, taking a back seat, letting us handle this, be, you know, get in the driver's seat. We're kind of sitting in the same driver's seat right now, but that's the way it goes. And it's at me and my partner's house, we host now, which is a very big honor for us. So all these people are coming to our house, and they're eating. And sometimes we don't know who these people are. Like, hey, did you invite that person? Like, no, I don't know that person. And the rule of thumb is, if you hear about the ghost supper, you're automatically invited. So these people are like, hey, I heard you're having a supper from so-and-so. I'm like, yeah, you're welcome. You sit, eat. And they sit and eat. And we usually have a sacred fire out back because we really like the fire. We put special prayers into it, and when the fire is lit, the jibais know it's time to come and eat. And then they come and eat. normally. And we burn food for them, and we have, when we eat, they eat. So it's an ongoing thing throughout the evening. Like I said, people come, but we don't know who they are. And that to me is a great honor, that you have strangers coming in your home to feed you. And Native and non-Native. I mean, a lot of our non-Native friends, they come and eat. And one story that really sticks out in particular is I had a really good friend I graduated with. And we all had problems with substance use. We partied a lot. And he never got out of it. And I was over in actually Austria, Vienna, for work, working on an exhibit. And I got word that my friend Greg took his own life. He had battled with alcoholism for 15 years. And he finally lost the battle. So it was a very, very sad day. It was a very good day work-wise, but on a personal level, it was a very sad day. That, you know, one of my classmates, one of my friends, is no longer here. So we got back home and figured this out. You know, how did I survive this? And I was going back to my home, my environment, is what really guarded me against these things. My experiences, my family, my spirits, you know, my cross village. So I was very grateful, and I would go back home and give thanks to me being here. I made it through this, but some of my cronies aren't making it. How can I help them? Sometimes you can't. They got to help themselves, but focusing on me is that I got to make sure I stay here and do what I need to do to be here. And that's just going through my own, you know, personal ceremonies, my own personal connection with my sacredness, my environment, the things that I believe to be in this world that guide me. I always pay homage to, pay respects to, keep in touch with. We call those bondage, we call those spirits. So I'm always constantly doing this, personally, my own level. So the time comes, we're getting ready for the ghost supper, and it's a big, you know, you gotta go buy food, you gotta get ready. And then I was thinking about Greg, my friend, and lots of few other friends of substance abuse over the years, and thinking about them. But Greg in particular, because it was fresh, and then I seen Greg's dad in the grocery store. I was like, what do you say to this guy? He just lost his son, and he just looked at me, I look at him, we kind of had this awkward silence, and he's like, your mom told me about a certain supper. I'm like, really? And mind you, Greg's dad is not Native, never did anything Native, never really interacted with me and my community at all. He interacted through his son and me, mainly through sports. I'm like, yeah, Larry, you know, the ghost supper? He's like, yeah, the ghost thing. Then he got silent again. You want to come? Because that would be nice. I'm like, absolutely, you know, come on over. This is the date we started all this time. He goes, what do I do? I go, nothing. You just come and think about Greg and eat. And he goes, I can do that. He goes, do I bring a dish? And I go, bring what Greg might. Okay, I can do that. And so I didn't think he would come right there. Here we are, there's 100 people in a tiny little, you know, 14 square foot house, and it's packed, there's kids jumping and people laughing, and it's controlled chaos for about 5 hours. But we love it. That's what it is. And here comes Greg's parents. They walk in, and everybody looks at him, and they go, oh. And I go, no, no, you're in the right place. Come on in. You know, sign in, and have a seat. And we took his food, and they just sat, you know, stood there for a second. And no, fine, you know, wherever you can find a seat, sit. And they did. They sat down, and my mom's like, who's that? And I'm like, that's Greg's parents. He's like, oh, that's, wow, okay, great, you know. Had them sit. And so they sat. And this other group of people come in. And colleagues of mine, non-Native, and they were like, where do I sit? Wherever you can. And they sat next to their parents. And didn't think anything of it because I'm busy doing, you know, dishes and everything else. And we look over, and Greg's parents and these new people, they didn't know each other, the people that came in, crying and hugging, weeping, sobbing. I'm like, whoa, it's getting heavy over the corner. Let's just let them have a moment. And we did. And called their names. They had to eat. They all ate together. And then they were done. And I kind of was asking, well, what was going on over there? And come to find out, the second couple that came in, the woman, her first husband, had taken his own life. And they just met with Greg's parents, and they were talking about what it means to have loss on that level. And they just really bonded instantly. And it was a real, real moment. And I was just going, glad that they could have that in our supper, in our space, in our sacred area. And they felt comfortable to do this, and they were sharing. And then they went and they left. So, to me, that the space is so important. Like, could this have happened somewhere else? Maybe. But I think it needed to happen home, where we were. And to have that ability to open our home up and have the ability to share that. And thinking of my ancestors who carried on those traditions, so we could do this. And a lot of my ancestors, their beliefs were persecuted. And they were, I mean, Native religion was outlawed until 1978. We had a federal law, the Indian Religious Freedom Act, for us to practice our religion openly. So a lot of our ancestors had to hide things until it became legal, and then they could kind of slowly bring it out and open. So I thought about that quite a bit, that we could do this openly without fear of somebody coming and arresting us or breaking us up. But now we were at a stage where we were inviting non-natives in and sharing the space. And it was healing in one way or another. There wasn't some rule that you had to be Odawa or believe a certain way. It's just there with good intentions, like I feel today. Just at the house with good feelings. So it happened, and now I see, you know, Greg and his parents and the other couple, and once in a while we mention it, but we don't have to go in great depth because it was for that space and that time. But having that ability to do that was really special. It really meant a lot to me personally, and also our family and our community to have that. But that sacredness all around you, you don't know how it's going to come or where it's going to come from. And not to have any defined rules or expectations about it. It's just there all the time. And I see it in a lot of different ways, whether it's an act of kindness or somebody does something, or just last night, to make my life better, I got a dog. Dog's help. I have a lot of frustration in my life for a lot of things. I get angry, I get frustrated. I was like, I need a dog. Plain and simple. And I got a puppy walking. I don't know. Thing is insane. Doesn't know where the bathroom is, to chew on everything. But he's super cute and super awesome, and he's made my life a lot better. So to me, that's part of that sacredness. Like, this animal enhances my life so much. And he has to go like 6:30 in the morning. And so he's like on the bed, like, okay, let's go. And he makes me get up and move. And I'm like, I need this. I need to get moving more. Maybe not at 6:30, but okay, here we go. 10 o'clock at night, he's like, okay, I gotta go again, unless I'm gonna go in the house. I'm like, okay, let's go. I'm moving more, and I'm outside. And being outdoors is utterly sacred to me. It's the most sacred. That's our temple, that's our church, is the outdoors. It's just connectedness and always harping on our kids, people that get off the phones, get off the electronics, go outside, look at the moon, go into the forest. There's healing that goes on when you're outside. It's scientifically proven that when you go into the woods and out in nature, you heal on multiple levels. So you have to be out there. You have to be disconnected to really connect to what's really important. So just having that dog saying, I need to walk, and I'm not looking at my text or looking at my phone. It's like I'm walking with them. We're looking at the stars. We're listening to the birds. We're seeing the sun. And that really has helped me immensely in the last year with my balance of being mentally well, mentally healthy. So that sacredness to me is you never know where it's going to come from and how it's going to occur. And we always tell, you know, our youth, no, not, don't have expectations on it. Just let it occur and be open to it. But make sure that you have that ability to be open. And if you start using and, you know, putting these things into your body, you're closing yourself off all the time. The sacredness. And that's what brought me out of my funk, my dark spot, was being open and having that sacredness around me. So I know I went over my time by a bit, but I want to say miigwech. And that is a word that's hard to translate in my language. Usually it translates into thank you, but as one elder said, that's not really the appropriate translation. He said, miigwech means I'm grateful for all that you've given me. And I'm grateful for the time that you've given me, the space to share, and the opportunity to be here. So I say miigwech, and thank you for that.
Thank you. That was really, really wonderful. Thank you, Eric, for sharing so many insights about the sacred, your ancestors, and nature, and your relationships. Miigwech, is that the word? Miigwech.